Welcome back.
Hey. We recording now? Can I take the log off my head? Do you mind?
Yeah, I'm just at sea at the minute, so.
Fair enough. To be honest, the way like this looks like it's very snugly fit, doesn't it? Like I wouldn't, if this was actually on my head, I think I'd be panicking.
Yeah, it's like you really, it's quite claustrophobic.
Fitted. Really fitted. If I do this, wow.
Oh, it goes underneath.
So I can get my hand into the log and out the other side.
Just to warn anyone who's listening on audio thinking, have these guys lost the plot? Johnny's head is currently stuck in a log and now he's a dinosaur. We have had constant trouble with Riverside, which is the tool that we use to record the podcasts. And so we thought, you know what, should we just give Google Meet a try? And it's blown our minds. It's incredible.
Insane. Absolutely insane.
I mean, Johnny's just in the desert in Sedona at the minute.
There's a giraffe. Which side is it? That side. That side. That's now you're one. Chips, aren't you?
I am Chips. I am Chips. My God. This whole episode is just going to be us sat in spaceships and late
Where
night.
Where are you? Like on the streets of Amsterdam or something? Having a coffee. Should we remove visual effects? Get down to business.
Let's get down to serious business.
Down to it. Actually, you know what? live on the podcast. Recorded live. No, it's not actually live. You ready?
I'm so ready. Oh, wonderful. You put it on skew whiff.
Slightly askew, isn't it?
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
That's what happens when you try and do something while filming. Here we go.
Thankfully, I paid the extra £2 for the vinyl stickers, so they're easier to take off. Again, for the sake of the blind or for the people listening on audio only, Johnny has just affixed a propane flame logo to his microphone.
Have you fobbed me off with ones that have a white border? Why has yours not got a white border?
So I carefully, with scissors, cut around. Yeah.
That's using like first year of school and using the skills you learn, isn't it? Cutting around the edges. Colouring. Oh, that can be a fun job for this evening. I can cut around the edge of this.
Here's one I made earlier.
And you might be thinking, a lot of pressure. What if you get it wrong? No need to worry about it. Look how many attempts I've got.
It's true. You can really fuck it up and you'd be
I
fine.
I'll upload a picture later of just like lines just cut all over this. Me trying to...
You covered in PVA glue and prick stick.
Bleeding.
Yusuf, I ran with scissors. I know you said not to, but...
So, you know, I watched Becca go up some stairs the other day with some scissors, just holding them like a weapon. I was like, has no one ever taught you to how to run properly with scissors? And then you think, like, is running with scissors something that you are taught to do?
Oh, no. So I'll tell you what, there's two household psychopath moves that people still do commonly, and they're to do with washing up. So one of them is, I really hope you're not guilty of these. I feel like you're not, but washing up and then leaving the suds just all over the dishes to dry. Okay.
No, don't do that.
Can't even think of a reason why you would do that, just to really maximize the number of parabens and chemicals that you get into your body. And then the other one is putting knives face, like blade up, in the cutlery drying rack.
Right. No, I don't do either of those.
Because you're not absolutely nuts.
Lunatic.
So.
I am, however, a flower.
Such a beautiful flower as well, with a...
You know what's scary, genuinely scary, is that it can, like when I close my eyes, it can tell. When I go, it can tell. Terrible.
Someone posted a thread about a new TikTok filter, which beautifies you. And they're saying that this is like a psyop, that it's such a good filter, and that it also like you can wave your hand over your face and it's really, it doesn't get disrupted by anything, but it just makes you like 4 points out of 10 more good looking. So it's realistic enough to not just look like it doesn't just blush out your face or remove blemishes or anything. It's like it just really turns up the attractiveness. And there's loads of women like showing it and then showing before and after. And they're saying this is the psyop to ruin everyone's self-esteem.
I saw this like influencer was posting photos before and after using filters of herself and how much of a difference it made. And I think I like to think I'm like fairly up to date with like what's possible, but I had no idea, like no idea how it could feasibly be. Most images I see of people on the internet are just filtered.
Oh yeah. It's when the whole reality comes crashing down. You're like, is everything that I've seen? And you know, like Matt Does Fitness posted a great thing the other day of him in his garage, just with washed out lighting, right, looking like normal, not unflexed with bad lighting. And then the standard darn lighting where he's flexing, and it definitely adds like 15 kilos of muscle.
He can do that though, because he's 100 kilos stage lean all of the time. And my retort would be, oh, well, he's clearly not natural, but he's just on an ongoing WADA approved drugs test.
I mean, we have violently debated on this podcast whether he's natural, and we didn't come to it. Well, I think the conclusion we came to is that he probably is.
I'm not pretty sure he is.
He's just a complete outlier.
There's got to be, though, isn't there? Somebody has to be an outlier.
Do you know what? That's a really wise thing to say, because the whole thing of like, oh, it's so unlikely that he'd be that big lean, because only 0.01% of, well, yeah, but those 0.01% of people do exist out in the wild, and probably they would become fitness influencers, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Like, well, he'd be wasted as a builder, or as a, well, not as a builder, maybe as a baker.
Even then. I'd let him knead my bread. I think he'd do a really good job of it. I think it's like, if let's say there's in the world, there's 100 people like Matt Does Fitness, which I think is realistic, right? There's probably more than 100 people like Matt Does Fitness. You just need one of those people to start a YouTube channel, and they're almost guaranteed to do quite well as a fitness influencer. And that's just what we see. The thing is that he's gone down the really like, I am going to do randomized drugs test. I'm going to get somebody to oversee the tests that are done. I'm going to agree to have someone arrive at my house without any warning. And I'm going to do multiple of them just to get the point across of like, I am not taking drugs.
It's a real like two fingers up at everyone, isn't it? Brilliant.
The thing that is interesting, not to labor this point, is if I was, say, Mike Thurston, and I saw him do that, it's a really easy thing. Let's say I'm not saying Mike Thurston's not natural, but let's say Mike Thurston is natural. It's a really easy way to just be like, oh, can I do that too, mate? Will you organize that for me as well? Do you know what I mean?
What, like, can I also do the drugs tests?
Yeah. So like Matt Does Fitness has gone to the effort of like doing all of the admin and the organization, and he's getting the drugs tests done, and he's got to analyze them.
I mean, if it's all free and someone could just, oh, I'll just organize it for you. Some guy will turn up at your house. Then why wouldn't you? Yeah.
Why wouldn't you, if you were a larger than normal fitness influencer gets a lot of drug accusations, and you see one of your mates that is Matt Does Fitness do a drugs test and get all this positive publicity. Ooh, can I do that too? Or you just feel like,
just stay quiet and hope that no one. Yeah. Like, fundamentally, why wouldn't you? If your entire career, if you could get a competitive advantage in your career and you're not competing, why wouldn't he be on all kinds of drugs and just lie to people that that's...
Well, why are we not on all kinds of drugs?
We actually have an old episode that I still very much stand by. It's called Why We Are Not on Steroids.
Right.
And I think my main reason was the admin, the cost and the admin. I'm just a mere medical doctor, And I find the idea of it so complicated. I feel so out of my depth to manage a steroid cycle properly, you know, while minimizing side effects. And of course, you can just go on a bit of test and try some HCG and hope that everything works okay. But if you bugger it up, you can go to a consultant endocrinologist. And if you, especially if you've been taking some wacky peptide hormones and stuff, and they're just going to go, no hablo inglés. Sorry, like, you've gone off the deep end here. You're at the limit of human science. We're just going to have to do what we can.
Fingers crossed. The trouble is, I think you probably know too much about it, don't you? Because most people who jump on steroid cycles and take growth hormone and all sorts of stuff have no idea what they're doing, really, other than what like an internet forum tells them to do. And a lot of them are fine.
Yeah, not true.
It's speaking the curse of understanding how serious the thing is. You don't understand all of it, but you understand enough to know that if you get it wrong, it's really problematic. And it's actually best to know all of it or none of it. And you are somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I think that's a very good description of the problem.
Ooh.
Speaking of which.
Look at this. This is like I'm in a live radio show with how that came up.
Well, hey, Jamie, just pull up the article. This came out in the news this week.
Here we go again.
Here we go. We have to be careful, boys, now. So, especially on International Women's Day, USA Powerlifting now has to let transgender athletes compete in the women's division after losing a discrimination case. So, there's a trans athlete called JC Cooper who sued the federation in 2021, and the USAPL has now had to make some changes to their rules. So just scanning this article here, we can see that their statement was basically, our position is that we've aimed at balancing the needs of cis and transgender women whose capacities differ significantly in purely strength sports. Lack of access to coaching and practice facilities, increased risk of depression and suicide. So saying that there are social and non-hormonal disadvantages that trans athletes experience in sport, which is absolutely true. There's a lot of discrimination and negative press that they get. So I've got a few questions about this, but I don't know if you're bursting for a comment before I dive in.
Well, so just to really get to the heart of the matter, so a trans athlete that used to be a man has transitioned to a woman is now able to compete in the women's division of the IPF.
Yeah, correct.
Or is it the IPF or is it the USAPL?
The USAPL.
Okay. Which isn't anymore in the IPF, I believe. I think they had a fallout with the drug testing protocol. That was the last bit of like IPF news before I left powerlifting that I was aware of. But yeah, okay, so it's a US-based thing. Not that it matters. It's still a massive federation. I think we've discussed this before, but the thing that seems the least fair to me is just over the course of your lifting career, the levels of testosterone that you've had available to you and the strength and the development that facilitates. Because it's the question that I think we kind of arrived at the last time we discussed this is, how is it different to allowing somebody who was on a really strong steroid cycle for 5 years and stopped and then compete? How is it any different to that? And I appreciate there's all the sort of like social and emotional considerations, and that's like a separate part of the conversation. But if you look at it from like a, who is it going to be able to lift the most, put the most weight on a bar and perform it for the reps required in a powerlifting competition? Surely there's an advantage there. Surely that unlevels the playing field.
There's a lot of separate plates that we're having to balance to try and come to a solution to this problem. So one of them is people's right for gender expression. And then there's also protecting women from male advantage in sport, which is what you've highlighted there. Mm-hmm. And the main question to kind of try and answer with that is, if you've lived your life as a man, or if you've gone through male puberty specifically, which is a big old blasting of testosterone over a few years, that gives you a big upgrade in your cardiovascular capacity, your muscle density, your bone density, your satellite cells, your reaction speed, your aggression, your motivation to train, all those kind of things. So then you transition. How long does that advantage last for post-transition? Mm. Now, some people will claim that immediately on transitioning, you're a woman. Biologically, everything, physiologically, you're a woman, and you should be able to compete immediately. That's a bit disingenuous because there are some advantages, but perhaps some of those, that edge that you get kind of fades after, say, a year post-transition. You're on female hormone therapy and so on, and then back to a level playing field. Again, we'd have to quantify what that difference is, and that someone has done a study looking at different sports and seeing what the percentage difference in advantages across speed, strength, power, jump height, those kind of things. And it is a bit different for different sports. JC has said that her main argument is that there is no evidence of trans women dominating in sports.
Right.
And therefore, that's why she sued the USAPL.
Is that not a function of how many trans athletes there are, in, like, especially in powerlifting, for example? Like, I don't imagine as a percentage of the population of people who lift in those federations and those competitions, presumably it's a small number.
So, yeah, as a percentage, then, is it that if you just don't have enough people to meet statistical significance for them to dominate in the sport? Maybe it's out of sportsmanship as well, that they choose not to, or out of discrimination. They go, oh, I'm just going to get railed by the media if I do compete, so I'm going to step out. Or I'm only going to compete in non-gendered competitions. Maybe also there's not enough money in it.
I'm going to bring up some numbers here. Because what I'm thinking is, like, to that point, they don't dominate in sport. Raw Nationals, here we go. Here we go. God, this is a big bloody database.
While you were finding that, the gender gap across general sports ranges from 5.5% in the 800-meter freestyle swimming to 18.8% in long jump. So for running performances, the mean gap is 10.7%, 17% for jumps, 9% for swimming. And generally, men have an advantage in this. There is a systematic review that claims that after people transition, there's no physiological benefit because it's offset by the other restrictions that transgender people face. That's a social argument that they're making there.
But it's like, let's say you decided to transition and you went through hormone therapy and whatever the processes are required. Like, presumably, you're going to I suppose there's kind of two routes. Like, one of them is you're a powerlifter and you're at your current strength and you decide to transition. And presumably during the transition, you continue to train and you're continuing to do like four sessions a week, squat, bench, deadlift. Mm-hmm. You would think that you're not going to suddenly lose all of the muscle mass that you've gained over 15 years of training. But maybe that's naive of me. I don't know. Like, maybe if you do go through really strong hormonal treatment, you would lose. You would like be normalized to the strength of other women in your weight class with the same training age.
So you're asking how enduring is the effect of living life as a man or having 30 years of...
Yeah. So I suppose like if you take like someone who's always been a woman, same age as you, same training age as you, and you today decide to transition and you both go to USAPL Nationals this year. Like who has the advantage in that competition, or rather, do you have an unfair advantage in that competition?
Well, this also depends on what their criteria for gender is. So the Olympics, as far as I know, they may have changed this since this, because this is from the last video we did on this, is that you have to demonstrate serum testosterone below 10 nanomoles per liter for 12 months prior to your first competition.
Okay.
But you can have a penis and balls. Yeah. To require surgical anatomical changes as a precondition to participation is not necessary to preserve fair competition.
I see. So that they are concerned about serum test levels in the year leading up to the competition,
rather than penis and balls.
Which is actually, from a sporting perspective, I think a really sensible way of viewing it. Because it just gets away from the like... that what I suppose could be quite a difficult narrative and a difficult mm-hmm. thing to navigate is if you just say, look, blood tests for this period of time, if it's within this range, you're allowed to compete.
Yeah, because that's independent of, like, you could say, right, I'm identifying as a woman now, next day, but it's like, well, okay, but you still need that 12-month period. However, it's a bit reductive. They've gone testosterone. What about EPO? What about GH?
Mm. Well, the other key assumption is that, like, to use that example, so the reason I brought up these numbers, by the way, what do you weigh right now?
75.
Okay. So you'd be in the 76 kilo class. So Jasmine Penn, who won the USAPL Nationals in the 76 kilo class, squatted 205, benched 130, and deadlifted 212.
Okay.
Now,
is she number one?
I think so. Assuming I'm looking at this right, like I'm sure someone who knows a lot about powerlifting might say, like, oh my God, you picked a trans athlete or whatever. But like, back to the point of trans athletes don't dominate in sports.
Most of the total. How much could I lose off my total?
547.
Okay. So I could lose 37 kilos off my total and still beat Jasmine Penn.
Yeah. Yeah. That's assuming that, like, your total is the total you're able to put up in USAPL Nationals is the best numbers you can possibly. But yeah, I see your point. But like, to the point of like, why is it, it's not like, you know, trans athletes aren't moving into USAPL and dominating. Like, mm-hmm. those are pretty fucking good numbers. Like, most guys I know who've trained for years with all of the testosterone available don't have those numbers. And are, like, in fact, nowhere near those numbers in some cases. So, like, if you are not a competitive powerlifter as a man with test levels above whatever that threshold is, and you decide to transition, like, and we assume you drop strength and you drop muscle mass, like, you've got to be a really strong bastard to just walk in and dominate these competitions. So I think that's why. But surely if you throw enough people who have trained for 15 years into that, like, who decide, yes, now I can compete as a woman, and that supported my decision, I wanted to transition, and now I can still compete in the sport I want to, blah, 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 then you would think that eventually you'll get someone who's dropping from a 700 kilo total as a 76 kilo lifter.
Oh, I see. Someone who's like a James Duff character who...
Yeah.
So...
Let me just, for comparison, here's the 74 kilo. So this, what did I say there? 550-ish.
Mm.
Yeah. So Taylor Atwood weighed in at 73.63 and he totaled 838.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's so mental total.
Yeah, Taylor Atwood's a beast. So he squatted 303, just missed a 200 bench and deadlifted 340.5.
These are all raw.
This is raw. 340.5 suggests it's either a world record or a USAPL record or whatever. So that, you know, Taylor is the thick end of 300 kilos better than the similar weight class in the women's federation, the women's division of the USAPL. So that's if you take like the top of the current in USAPL and compare them.
Right. So that's how good of a powerlifter do you have to be to start kind of messing with these numbers? And yeah, like I'm not actually so worried about the genuine trans athletes that want a right to compete. It's if you give people enough incentive, you will have piss takers. You'll have someone who wants to come in and just take the mic or being facetious. And now that they're protected, what effect does that have on the way that the sport plays out? Like, does it make a mockery of trans athletes? Or does it step on women's rights and women's toes for their right to compete, protect it? There's so many things to try and balance, and it's not an easy one. We did a video on this where we actually have a friend who is a trans man, transitioned from female to male, and is a bodybuilder, talks about his experience on testosterone and is very candid about how it affected his performance and drive to train and all this stuff.
This thing about some study saying that there are no advantages to testosterone, it's the biggest little shit I've ever heard in my life.
It's a fascinating video, so have a look at that.
The unknown is like, and this is to use a very extreme example, but let's say Taylor Atwood decided to transition for reasons separate from powerlifting, but wanted to still compete. Is this rule of like, you must have had this test level for a year sufficient to level the playing field?
We don't have much data on that, but the closest thing we do have is ex-steroid users.
Okay.
So the data on, let me find this. Yeah, so ex-steroid users, they've got, obviously the main thing from a muscular hypertrophy and strength perspective is the density of satellite cells and myonuclei.
Mm.
Now, that confers a potential for more muscle gain in the future.
Right.
After 36 months, ex-steroid users still had an advantage in terms of capacity for muscle gain. Now, it's not quite one for one because natural males are not steroid users. They've got exposure to testosterone in normal ranges and not, you know, multiple grams a week. So we can't quite make a comparison there, but it's interesting to see that's how long the effects last for, at least.
So to summarize, there might be some benefit. We're not sure.
I'm worried about stepping out of my lane here.
Okay.
But I think from a physiological perspective, it would be disingenuous of me to say that that immediately after transitioning or even after 12 or 36 months, that there's no advantage. And I suppose like most people, when looking at the science, would agree with that. Not everyone, but I suppose that's not really where the crux of the contention comes from, is it? It's more about people's right to expression and what that does to competitions and how do you try and please the most people without marginalizing one group or another.
Yeah. I don't envy them for having to make the decision. Like,
oh, God. Yeah.
Because I guess what you want is this seamless integration where like people can express themselves and compete where they want to compete, and the results don't play out such that like there are people there are people who compete on a day who feel like things have been grossly unfair. Like, I should have won had that person not been competing today, and it creates that kind, because not only does that create like distrust in the organization, it also reduces the, like, even if a trans athlete is to go in and compete and win, it almost like discredits the win, because people are like, oh, well, you're only winning because it's like offering that, the justification that may or may not be true, and we don't know.
There was that swimming competition where the trans athlete won, and the women who came second, third and fourth stood on the third podium in protest. Don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
So
yeah
at the end of the video with Ethan, he was, so the one of the potential options, which again is a bit messy, is like, do you just open sport as a free-for-all? Do you just get rid of divisions, weight divisions and gender divisions, and just say best person wins? Or do you have a trans-only category? And is a trans-only category will it be so undersubscribed that it wouldn't produce the same level of competition that we want in sport?
And how would you have a because it's just occurred to me that like if you assume the transition the other way around, then that person is taking exogenous testosterone to transition to becoming a man. At what point is that, like, you know, you almost got to monitor those blood levels to the extent that the testosterone has to be in like a fair range.
Mm-hmm. But then we're aiming for fairness. Is that like when people are born at different heights and different levels of access to sport and different, you know, it's like we just arbitrarily define, oh, but this particular number on the blood test has to be fair. But yeah,
like, it's not fair that Owen Hubbard has shorter arms than me. That's never been fair.
You should send him a message. Owen,
we're just in the podcast and I've thought about this quite a bit, and I just want you to know, I think it's really unfair that your arms are as short as they are. And I hope you can bring yourself to the public apology and just get this aired out.
Just drive hard.
Drive hard.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to say that we've put that topic to bed, but I don't think we have. I think
we think we navigated through that without stepping on any landmines, other than when you got someone's gender wrong. Apart from that.
I mean, that's a pretty major one. I might even have to edit it out.
And edit out me talking about it. No.
Oh, yeah. Genuine mistake.